Richard Quigley. I don't know if you know Richard.
Yes,
you know about Reno Richard.
He's running for sheriff. I've got a button on. I've got a button on for it.
God, you do.
For sheriff.
Quigley, but my goodness, is this some sort of setup? I don't know what's going on here. Anyway, Quigley is running for sheriff. We have interviewed him before on numerous issues. And he's actually made the papers recently. He was in yesterday's Mercury News because I guess an official at the state level has denied him and three other candidates running the right to be on the ballot because they don't have the proper diplomas, which he is going to be talking about in this upcoming interview. So I want you to stay with us. First, we're going to have a brief musical interlude. We're going to play a song by Mark Levy. Again, I mentioned to you his Shiro's Heroes tape is one of my perennial favorites. And then we're going to go right into an interview with Richard Quigley. Stay with us.
I'll sing of Joseph Bostrom, better known as Old Joe Ho. Murdered by a firing squad, shot but never killed. His will survive his ashes, be strewn across the land. So flowers that refuse to die will rise up strong and stand. We sing the songs to fan the flames and talk about him much. The ashes of this rebel voice are still too hot to touch. Joe's corpse lay in Chicago, where 30,000 marched. They flew the wobbly banner high above the throng it arched. The workers sang in Jerry's name, they did not eulogize. They honored Joe Hill's last request, no more organized. Then the Union took Joe's body, which then they did cremate. His ashes stuffed in envelopes and mailed to every state. Except, of course, to Utah, for Joe had clearly said, don't leave me here in Utah, there I must be caught dead. We sing his songs to fan the flames and talk about him much. The ashes of this rebel voice are still too hot to touch. Then someone in the mailroom discovered what was up. The postmaster was summoned, the mailing to disrupt. An envelope tore open in the canceling machine. Was just Joe's way of saying automation is obscene. With patriotic fervor, this postmaster was seized. He treated that poor envelope as if it was diseased. He said, I won't deliver such a person mail. So for a while, Joe had to wait in some dead letter file. We sing his songs to fan the flames and talk about him much. The ashes of his rebel voice are still too hot to touch. At long last, the post office sent Joe's ashes to D.C. to the archives, what an artifact of ancient history. The Wadleys in Chicago asked Betty B. said, oh, they wouldn't see him cataloged down in that catacomb. So Joe's back with the Wadleys, and thus concludes my tale. But if there's a wall, I might say, don't trust the mail. We'll build that one big union before Joe's ass gets cold. And we'll bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old. We sing his songs to fan the flames and talk about him much. The ashes of this rebel voice are still too hot to touch. We sing his songs to fan the flames and talk about him much. The ashes of this rebel voice are still too hot to touch. The ashes of this rebel voice are still too hot to touch.
Well, we're on the line with Richard Quigley, inveterate and unrepentant sheriff's candidate and general freedom rights fighter, or right for freedom fighter. Anyway, here he is.
Yeah.
So, Richard, you're a star. I was reading about you in the Mercury News on Saturday.
Being in the Mercury News makes me a star?
Well,
in a sense, for those who like to pick up their people from the Mercury News. This is a story about sheriff's candidates being rebuffed because state law apparently prohibits you from running for sheriff unless you are, if you have a master's degree and 1 year of experience in law enforcement during the past 5 years, a bachelor's degree and 2 years of experience, or an advanced certificate from the Commission on Peace Officers Standards and Training. What's your reaction to that? Don't you feel that our sheriffs should have that kind of experience, Richard, before getting into the saddle?
Well, it depends on who we the are is going to be. If you're talking about Santa Cruz County, it's ludicrous.
Well, why is that?
Well, I'm not really sure what they're trying to accomplish as I read those requirements. It looks to me like they want someone who's recently trained and indoctrinated, if you will, into the new police state mentality, and are specifically trying to avoid anyone outside that mentality.
Well, don't you feel that a level of expertise is necessary in becoming head of a rather complicated department which involves mastering law enforcement procedures, public relations activities, and other such like rooty booty?
Well, yeah, and why don't the candidates make that case to the voters? You know, I'm a little perplexed by the fact that the legislature would presume to substitute their wisdom for that of the people. If the people wish that, they vote that. But on the other hand, if the people can be reached, the voters can be reached with the reason that the function of the sheriff in Santa Cruz County in particular is one more administrative than police. And if you look at the training that these officers get, they're talking about the kind of training it takes to go out there and perform a proper arrest, presumably without violating the rights of the arrestee. And absolutely nothing about administration of an operation or department the size of that one. So do I think that somebody that has a degree in business management and never seen the first day behind a badge would probably be more competent to deal with this office than some guy that's been 20 years a backseat cop? Yeah, I think that argument could be made, but not with the law as it currently stands.
Well, you've been barred from the ballot, at least as far as, you got the adequate number of signatures, but they barred you?
Well, they gave me a letter of denial, and it's kind of interesting. This would take the whole 20 minutes, so I won't do the whole movie, but let me just say that the only real change that happened in the last 3 years, which is 3 years ago, they made a change in the elections code. Prior to that, if somebody was going to challenge a candidate, it had to be one of the other candidates or some other person. But, and so that the candidate would be defending his right to run. With this change that they made 3 years ago in the election code, now what happens is that the candidate now has to sue because the elections clerk is assigned the responsibility of denying access to the ballot. They're making the ruling that the court would previously have made.
Mm-hmm. So are you in fact intending to sue to get on the ballot?
On Monday.
And is it going to cost you any money to do so?
I think it'll be the normal cost of suit is somewhere around $200, but I'm not certain because when you go to the California Supreme Court, it's a lot different than walking in and talking to these yokels here in town.
Now, do you have to be an attorney to do this, or are you going to sue in your own pro per?
There'll be two of us filing, and I think we're both scheduled to file Monday, although to get the briefs right, we may wait as late as Tuesday. There's myself and the guy, not from Shasta. I don't know why I said Shasta. Yeah, he's actually in Trinity County, but he and I should be suing simultaneously in the California Supreme Court in San Francisco. By the way, you know most people don't know that the Supreme Court of California is in San Francisco?
Most, but not all. I myself, of course, sought to appeal the Supreme Court my 2-month sentence for serving free food in San Francisco, and I might note, failed, but that's another story.
Well, this is a case that they're obviously going to have to hear, and it's kind of interesting because there's two things that they're going to be deciding on. One is my right and Mr. Smith's right to run for sheriff.
Which Smith is this?
His name is B.E. Smith.
He's the infamous B.E.
Yeah.
Take me to a magistrate.
You got it. That's the guy. By the way, there's a real interesting case on that came out of the night a couple months ago.
Well, first give us the analysis of what you're doing with the sheriff's thing.
Okay, well, we're going to the Supreme Court because that's the court of original jurisdiction, and that way we don't have to fool around with these rummies here in town getting it wrong and then going over the hill so their golf partners can get it wrong, so we go to the Supreme Court. The courts have already found that in election matters such as this, that the California Supreme Court is the court of original jurisdiction. Now,
what are the two issues involved?
Well, there's two issues involved. One of them is my right to run for sheriff. The other one is, of course, my right as a voter to vote for whom I choose. Mm-hmm. So that I'll be approaching the court, as will be he, suing for both rights from two angles. There's also one other guy that I think is going to be coming down from B.E.'s neck of the woods, who's sort of literate himself in writing briefs and so on, and I believe he's going to come down and sue independently for the right to vote for whom he chooses.
Well, also Alexander Rawls of Palo Alto.
Well, now his case, what will happen, see, is it will inform the court that that case has been denied. His motion was denied for, he moved for mandamus in Sacramento and sued the Secretary of State. And the court ruled against him. He's now considering what he's going to do, but I don't think he's going to have a lot of choice. I think what will happen is that when he files appeal, he'll file a notice of appeal sometime this week, the court will reach down and take the case. So they'll bring it up to be heard at the California Supreme Court level. There's also another guy I found out about that nobody knew about, who's a 14-year cop that doesn't have current qualifications in the current certification, but he's 14 years a cop. And then he was 6 years as the general manager of a chain of hardware stores, so that he's got his administrative experience down solid. This guy is exactly the guy. I mean, if it wasn't me, he's the next best candidate there is.
Now, what county is he running in?
He's trying to run up in Santa Rosa. Now, he's not a fighter. That's the problem. We can tell his story, but only by affidavit, and I've got to get his affidavit down here before I go into court. So we can go in and argue that he's being held out, although his answer, like a good little sheeple that he is, being police trained, is that he's going to go back to school and try to get the certificate so that he can run properly.
I see. So he can get patted on the head and the pin.
Yeah, exactly. He, you know, don't mess with the system, no matter how corrupt, you know.
You ran for sheriff 4 years ago. Did you have a similar problem then?
Well, yes. 4 years ago, I didn't have the financial advantage of being able to buy my way onto the ballot, and there was, the signatures were spread so thin with five candidates that I didn't get on the ballot, and I ran as a write-in. I kept trying to get, what's his name, our illustrious sheriff?
Mark Tracy.
I kept getting him, trying to get him to come out and sue me. Because that's the way it used to be done. The other candidates would sue the person they considered not qualified. And I was hoping he would sue me so that we could get the issue on the ballot.
Well, this time you got the issue on the ballot thanks to the, Secretary of State or the...
Well, the issue's up, yeah, this time. And it's not the Secretary of State, it is the California legislature.
Hmm.
They're the ones that passed the law that said that the elections clerk has to put the county in the middle of this mess.
So, how many votes did you get last time, Richard?
You know, I have absolutely no idea. You know, a grand, maybe.
Out of how many votes did Tracy get?
I have no idea.
So you don't really have a sense of, is this more, are you actually aiming to win this contest or simply to give people an alternative?
No, 4 years ago I ran for the specific purpose of attacking that statute, and then I tried to get everybody ticked off enough that they would file suit against me to keep me from being, you know, a candidate. As it worked out, none of them did that, so the issue didn't come forward.
Were you the only other candidate at that time, you versus Tracy, or was there somebody
else? Oh, no, it was me, Joe Hernard, Mickey Alufi, is his name Stanton, out of SoCal, and Tracy. There were five of them.
And this time, how many candidates are there?
There's none. They're claiming he's running unopposed because Richard Riddell denied my application.
Amazing.
Yeah, so that's okay. I mean, you know, this time, I got into it because what I realized after running last time was not a run for sheriff. It was a run for issue to get that law changed. This time, I'm running against the bastard because he needs to be dumped.
Now, give us a quick summary in brief phrases of points 1, 2, 3, and 4 of what you think what needs to be changed in the sheriff's office.
Oh, man, I wish it were that easy. We need a complete shift in priorities from law enforcement officer to peace officer. They need to stop running around enforcing laws because they're there. This movement into the neighborhoods through these sheriff substations is absolutely subversive, man. This is the way that they have built. They built the police state in Nazi Germany. It's exactly the same thing. Property owners, business owners begin to dictate for all of society how things are going to be. I mean, it's just...
Wait a minute. Begin to dictate. Haven't they always done that?
In a very micromanagement way is what's coming. To a certain degree they do. They've always had a tremendous amount of influence, but it's now gotten where it's become officialized, brought out in the open, in your face, here we are. And it's pretty spooky watching it all come down.
So one of the points is the expansion of these local substations. The second point is you want peace officers and not just people who are running around enforcing every law.
Not law enforcement officers, peace officers, man.
And what's the third point and the fourth?
It's got to be a public relations campaign. We need to get out there, and instead of having a whole generation of young kids that can't say cop without disdain, I mean, it's horrible the way these people and their attitudes have alienated the young people of this country. And I don't know where the hell they think they're going to be in 20 years.
But not to mention the older people of this country.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of that too, but most of the people in my age group and yours are out there working. You know, they don't have any idea what the hell's going on. Now, the only people that really have time to look at it and are being pushed hardest by it are the young people.
Any more specifics about the kinds of changes you would make in the sheriff's department if you were elected?
Well, sure. I mean, I'd fire all the bad cops first of all.
And what percentage of the department does that include?
One or less? You're talking about percentage?
Yeah.
You probably got a handful of bad cops.
Uh-huh.
You know? I mean, that's it.
Okay.
I think I've met most of them. You know, a free man will draw a bad cop. That's just the way it is. They will.
So you fire the bad cops, and who else? Or what else would you do?
Man, there's so much. Follow up on 911 calls, for example. Follow ups on 911 calls. If they want to get the community involved in stuff, let's treat it more like a service business. And when we get 911 calls, have a follow up in 48 hours, and then a report on the follow up that comes in and is evaluated so that we can better serve the community.
Excellent. What else?
You know, you call a cop with 911 and you end up in jail. People need to know that happens more often than not in this county.
Mm-hmm.
You call 911, you've got a higher risk of going to jail than the person that you called 911 to get the help against. You know what I mean?
How about a police review board on the county level? What's your feeling about that?
My belief is peer review. I really like the idea of putting cops in charge of judging the behavior of the other cops. That way, I think that way the cream has a chance to float to the top.
You mean sort of like Chief Belcher's way of judging officers who shot Happy John Dine in Santa Cruz?
No, I'm talking about you very much like the jury pool that we have in this county, you know, where they reach in and they grab a bunch of voters and they drag them down to the courthouse, theoretically, to judge the conduct of their fellow citizens.
Mm-hmm.
I think a floating review board within the department to where the people's names, their names are just drawn and assigned to various cases that come into internal affairs so that there's a review in-house. Now, whether or not there should be an overseer to that whole process, a civilian overseer to that whole process, I don't have a terrible problem like that, but I'd be I'd be most interested in seeing something set up through the grand jury than I would just some ad hoc committee.
Now, as a man who's watched the grand jury operate for the last 4 years, do you want to give us a summary of its behavior over that period around, let's say, transgressions by the sheriff's department?
Well, the grand jury, the way it stands right now, pretty much belongs to the district attorney, but that's because there's not a strong voice of opposition to that. If there's a strong hand of opposition to that, you know, the sheriff's role in this county is a lot more key than people think. It's probably one of the single most powerful positions within the structure of government. Within the county, it's certainly among the most. Do you know that there's only one person in the entire government, in the bureaucracy? Now, you and I can do it at any time, but I'm talking about by authority of statute. There's only one person in this county that can arrest the sheriff.
Who is that?
This is going to blow your mind because I haven't followed it to the next step, but the only person that can arrest the sheriff as a matter of law is the coroner.
And, of course, any other citizen.
Any citizen. Absolutely. You can always perform a citizen's arrest. That's your fundamental absolute. Don't you try to take it away in any of the right.
Good luck.
But I'm talking about as a matter of statute. People assign power through the government who can perform an arrest by virtue of power
granted
in them by the governor. The government, the only one that can do that is the coroner.
Let's return to, I asked you about the grand jury
and
its way of, its controls on the sheriff's department, but that really is a larger issue. One I want to get into with you, but I don't think I really have time to tonight. Let's see if we can summarize any more brief changes you'd like to see made in the sheriff's department once you're elected.
Well, it's hard to know what all of the problems are, and I'm sure there's a whole bunch of them. What I've got to do is you roll back the carpet and find out what's been getting swept under it for the last 20 years and sort it out and fix it. You know, the emphasis has got to be on providing a proper service to the entire community without violating rights and without violating law. You know, it seems to me like when all else fails, go to the rule book.
Now, what kind of support do you have inside the sheriff's department? Can you name five deputies who would support you or would come out and endorse your candidacy?
Well, they ask me if I can, then ask me if I will. Yeah, I can.
You can, but you probably won't, huh?
No, of course not.
So,
man, it's the kind of thing that happens when I walk into men's room and I was standing there taking a leak and the guy will come up to the urinal next to me and lay it on me and leave, you know. But it's hang in there, man. You know, you're doing a lot of good for a lot of people, whether you know it or not. You really are. It may not look like it, but hang in there.
Now, you're not only doing the political road, Richard, you're also pressing to defend your rights in court. You want to give us an update on what's been going on there? We understand you've been pursued rather single-mindedly by one of the sheriffs who was at the substation.
He got his conviction on that case.
And what was his name?
Devereaux.
Oh, that's right, Sergeant Devereaux, who initially got into it with you in Aptos because you chose to park your car in a zone which he had apparently illegally painted red
at
his sheriff's station.
Yeah.
And apparently there is no such, you made your point because all tickets were thrown out.
Yeah.
The space is no longer painted red.
Yeah.
However, your friends have been, shall we say, significantly harassed and taken to court in what you consider to be a campaign of direct reprisal to your bringing this matter to his attention.
Yeah, the criminal conspiracy put together in a strict vindictive mode. It was all vendetta.
Now, you were telling me some time back that you've been winning a lot of these cases. Your friends have been, juries have been turning down attempts to convict your friends on bogus traffic stops and so forth, but you say now they've won one?
Oh, yeah. I lost my case. They had one infraction, two misdemeanors, heinous crime, driving while my license was suspended by the DMV, you know, blah, blah, blah. And
this is a jury trial?
Yeah.
And the jury found against you?
Well, they didn't have much choice. By the time the judge gets through telling them what they consider and how they vote on it, I mean, excuse me?
Which judge?
Kelly.
Oh, dear. You mean Kangaroo Kelly?
Yeah.
I see.
In all fairness to the guy, man, come on. He does the best job he can ultimately, you know, they'll pull him in and say, okay, here's what you're going to do, and he walks in there and he does it.
This is Tom. It's okay for a law to say you can't sleep at night, oh homeless people, because you can sleep during the day, Kelly?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, when...
I know that guy, yeah.
I'll tell you, man, he's a classic case of a bureaucrat looking for the liberation of a decent leadership. You know, there's cops out there, both city and county, that are doing crap just as bad. They're setting the whole thing up. They're a part of that game, and they're hating every minute of it. But they've taken on lives. You know, they've got wives to feed and houses to pay for and stuff at risk that goes way beyond anything that would be appreciated by way of sacrifice. So they hang in there. It's a convoluted thing that happens to them.
So poor Tom Kelly, who's got to make a couple of payments on his third house or whatever it is, we should be concerned and real sympathetic with him and his $100,000 a year salary?
No, I don't think that's what I'm saying. I think what I'm saying is that Tom Kelly is one of those guys that I think if the people that push him to do what he does would push him the other way, he could go there easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, since that's not likely to happen in the next eon, what's the point?
Well, that the nature of man is salvageable.
Of course.
You know, that the spirit
but
of man
the
has...
the nature of most judges is not. That's
But you watch what you put in front of them. That's one of the tricks about getting in as sheriff. You know, as sheriff, you get free, you get to kind of make up your mind about who you're going to arrest.
Well, now, are you going to run as a write-in candidate if your appeal fails?
Oh, no. No, I have no interest whatsoever. No, no.
Okay.
As an on-the-ballot candidate, I actually stand a chance of beating that some bitch.
Uh-huh.
The only press that I'm going to get, because I can't afford to buy airtime, you know, TV and radio and newspaper and stuff, so I'm going to have to capitalize on winning this court case at the Supreme Court and forcing by changing the law.
When is your hearing?
I don't know when they'll schedule it.
And when is the election? It's in what, June?
June 2nd. Yeah, no, it'll have to be right away. My guess is if we get filed on Monday, they'll have the hearing by the end of the month.
Now, do you have any upcoming court dates yourself or anything that's going on around?
Well, speaking of money.
Yes.
You know, the sheriff is now slated to make $114,000 a year.
No, that sounds like one good reason to run for sheriff.
Well, except that I'm not taking the money.
Oh, really? What are you going to do with it?
Well, I want to take 36 because that's what I said 4 years ago, that the job's worth 36 grand. Any administrative job, even as a public servant, with that kind of responsibility is worth 36 grand. You know, a guy can live comfortably on that, which means he's not going to be distracted by personal bill problems and can focus and do the job. So the money just frees him up to do the public service thing. There's $78,000 that's going to be left over for 4 years, which is somewhere over $300,000 and ain't this neat from a guy that don't make $300 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Dollars, that is, not thousand. But the other $78,000 a year will go into for openers getting the cars up to snuff so that they've got video cameras and recorders and everything on board in all the police units in this county. So that these false allegations that are being made about how abusive these cops out there are on the road can be put to rest because there'll be evidence that they've been good little boys.
Indeed.
And if they
haven't, then the DA can always ignore the evidence until it gets to federal court, in which case he can pay off $400,000, as he did in the case of Deputy Liberty, who beat up Nichols on his front yard lawn to the tune of his wife videotaping him, but that's another story, I guess.
Well, you remind me of Lily Tomlin. What did she say? No matter how cynical I get, I just can't keep up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is?
Nicely put.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I understand. I understand the cynicism. I really do, and particularly from your level of the fight, man, because you do such an incredible job you know, in one of the worst possible positions, you know. One of the things that's interesting about the sheriff of a county is that the sheriff has the ability to influence the kinds of behaviors that the cities exhibit. You do know that?
I would believe it.
So that if the constitutional rights of people within a city, within a county, are being violated by the police department, the sheriff does have the opportunity to affect that.
Assuming he doesn't get shot or impeached, of course.
Well, you know, yeah, recall elections. I expect that if I got elected, man, that would be the first order of business. It would be a recall campaign. Mm-hmm. And it would be a huge one, you know. And that would be okay, too, you know. I wouldn't care. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd have enough trouble with just the unions alone, because I'd be firing cops like hell wouldn't have it. I got about half a dozen.
What can folks do to support your Quigley for Sheriff campaign?
Well, right now, it's a matter of sort of hunker down, keep your fingers crossed, and keep a good thought, you know? And let's see what happens with the courts. And if I get through that and get my name on the ballot, there's going to be a lot to do.
Do you want people to call you up in anticipation of that?
Not at all. The word will be out as soon as it happens. And as soon as it happens, then everybody can recognize that they've got a choice and there's something that they get behind or not. No.
Any further updates in the case of the harassment of Aptos youth out at the Aptos Shopping Center? Which you were kind of, we were following that before. We were following the case of...
Jerry Henry.
Who?
Jerry Henry.
Jerry Henry, right, who was arrested for essentially, being at the coffee roasting company?
Yeah.
Over the outside at the coffee roasting company, in the outside area.
Yeah.
In a way that was advising younger people of their rights, right?
Well, yeah, and acting basically as a street missionary, you know. He
told us that Henry had been driven away from there by court action. Is that still the case?
Pretty much. He's got, there's an area toward the side of the town square that he can be in with nobody hassling him. And he does go down and work with the kids, but we were talking about that today. How it is that he's not allowed to walk within 20 yards of this coffee roasting company, you know, and stuff like that. It's like, this is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. He's lived in this place, this community for two decades, and he's been in and around that shopping center all of that time. And not until Dave Devereaux came to town with the sheriff's office did it become a problem for him. That's what I'm trying to tell you about these new sheriff centers that are going in. This is not what we want in our communities. We don't want people that are a part of the community, that fit in the community, that the community has accepted, suddenly having their behavior criminalized because of the appearance of the brown shirts. You know, it's just, this is quite bad. This is quite insane. That's what I'm doing in the middle of it. That's when I jumped in. That's when I decided to run this time. Not about qualifications. It's not about qualifications this time. Now it's about firing some bad cops.
Well, I hope we can get word that you are running, and I hope that these issues are raised more clearly and more vigorously during the campaign. And I want to thank you for being with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz today. Richard, any final words?
Yeah, I didn't really get a chance to cover the conditions over the jail, but that's another area where I was going to focus a lot of attention. There's a lot of stuff wrong, man, with the department. So
we know people have been suiciding right and left in that jail.
Been pretty bad the last year, hadn't it?
Four suicides, right?
Yeah. It was kind of interesting, you know, now that I've been sentenced to 35 days in jail. I was over there signing up for work release and getting booked and all that stuff. And
your crime again was?
No, driving while my license was suspended by the DMV. It's a little bit complicated and I won't go into it, but basically what I was convicted of was for contempt of a DMV record. Criminal contempt of a DMV record. And sometime when you got some time, I'll explain how that works. It's pretty funny. Anyway, but the chief of the jail came out, you know, and mentioned to me that he'd heard that I was going to be stopping by and staying with him a bit, and I said, yeah, that's the rumor, and basically he was trying to establish that there wasn't going to be any trouble. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of looking at him like, yeah, I'd hope not. Mm-hmm.
So he didn't offer you a rope or some pills, kind of
no.
Sort of an introductory sample to the jail? Or?
No, I think it bothered everybody when the newspaper asked me, you know, about this 35-day jail sentence, and I looked at him and said, well, you know, it'll just make me a more rounded, better rounded candidate. I will have some experience on what's going on inside the jail too. I mean, it's all part of the job. You know, so
we'll see if Santa Cruz will allow a known lawbreaker like yourself to scoff at the very traditions that make our city and county great.
You mean by running for sheriff?
Exactly. As far as I'm concerned, you should be running from the sheriff.
Well, that's sort of the way he looks at it. It's just that I'm not smart enough to be scared, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you very much. I'll talk to you next time.
All right.
We're on the line to Reverend Wiley Drake down in Buena Park.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And that was Richard Quigley, a sheriff's candidate. Probably not a write-in candidate, he said, but he's fighting to be an actual on-the-ballot candidate here in Santa Cruz County. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is the last hour of Bathrobes Pierce Broadsides, City Civil Rights for Poor People in Santa Cruz and around the world. As you heard, we were about to rush into a second interview with Reverend Wiley Drake of Buena Park, California. Drake is an admitted right-winger who actually has got a number of views that sharply diverge from mine. He's homophobic in my view. He's hobnobs with right-wing Republican politicians, all kinds of other bad things, but there are some damn good things he does that nobody else does as well. Namely, he supports the rights of homeless people in Buena Park. He fights City Hall down there. He fought a several-year battle to keep homeless people living in his church, sleeping in vehicles in his parking lot when no one else in town would do it. He actually went to trial. He lost that trial, but in a way, he won because he was sentenced to community service that was decided, the judge decided he'd already served the community service by serving all the homeless people, something that was kind of a new chapter as far as I can see for that kind of a case. Anyway, we followed up on his case. We have an interview coming up with Reverend Wiley Drake. That's soon. I'm also interested in what's going on in other areas of the country where there are safe zones. You may have heard of the safe zone. If you listened to our last show, we had an interview with Horace McHugh of the city manager's office in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, talking about the, I guess, 6 or 7 year old tent city. I guess it's actually called capital T, capital C, tent city in Fort Lauderdale, which has, I guess they've limited now to 240 homeless folks. They don't allow homeless kids. He talked about it at some length in our last broadcast, and we're hoping to have a second follow-up interview from homeless folks and homeless advocates there talking about what's going on in Fort Lauderdale from their perspective. But in any case, they are at least a decade ahead of us. They have a tent city. We've lost our open-air shelter, the Coral Street open-air shelter. We've lost, with no replacement, the only legal campground where homeless people can sleep, and dispersed all the homeless as refugees, and they're now committing suicide in the jails, dying under the bridges, and getting ticketed outside under the sleeping ban. A brief plug on that issue. The Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative is making its way, as most of you know, around the city. If you're a city voter and haven't signed it, it's time to do that. And if you want to hook up with folks who are going to be circulating that petition, I believe they're going to be out at the Homeless Community Resource Center out at Coral Street today, probably from 2 o'clock through the evening, in case you want to circulate petitions, in case you want to sign the petition, in case you want to just tell folks what's going on, and are you being hassled by the police? Are you finding, Councilmember Rotkin has said, a tolerated presence here in town, police not hassling you? We want to know about that. If you want to help with this campaign, you can give me a call at the HUFF line, the line for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
or you can contact the Coalition to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, actually the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, and I believe you can call the voicemail there at, before I give it out, let me think if I can remember the extension, because I know the main number, but I can never get the extension number. Nope, I'm going to ask you to call the Huff line if you want to help out, and I will pass on any volunteer efforts or questions to that group once I have the number firmly before me. We actually haven't been using that extension that much because it's better to get a live person than to get a recording anyway. I said we've been following Fort Lauderdale, and I actually got an interesting article in the mail the other day from City Links magazine in, not Fort Lauderdale, but Orlando, but it was about Fort Lauderdale and about a man named Arnold Abbott. You may remember the show opened with the song 999 Points of Light, a song about Sandra Loringer and her jail term for serving free food in Santa Cruz at the town clock. Well, even though we've been able to decriminalize that activity here in Santa Cruz and decriminalize it in San Francisco, to some extent, I've got to say that Feed the People, the group that was feeding people downtown in Santa Cruz, has been dispersed. Sean Alimi, the guiding light behind that project, faces 12 felony counts, which most of us think, as I've mentioned in previous shows, are completely bogus. I think 8 of them are for marijuana, 2 of them are for allegedly possession of methamphetamine, and the other 2 are for some sexual misconduct with minors. Looks like a bum rap to me, frankly. I wasn't there at the scene, but Alimi has been through this kind of harassment before. As I've mentioned, he spent months and months in jail, and the charges were eventually dropped. He's a thorn in the side to city authorities because he is so good-natured about his project, which is to feed poor people. And he's very friendly with the police, and he's very friendly with the community, and he just can't be stopped except apparently by this kind of thing. His attorneys have advised him that since he has had to put up a huge bail to get out of jail, if he serves food downtown and the police stop him for anything, they can pull him back into jail even on a trivial charge and revoke his bail. And so he suspended the food operation. The drug war has got another casualty here, hungry people in Santa Cruz. But getting back to Orlando and City Link magazine, an article appeared, Don't Feed the Homeless, in the January 21st issue by Jane Musgrave, which talks about Arnold Abbott. I'm going to read a little bit about Arnold before our next interview. Every Wednesday, Arnold Abbott provides free meals to the homeless in Fort Lauderdale Beach. And if he returns this week, his next meal could be in jail. That's the kind of the kickoff line for this story, Don't Feed the Homeless. Arnold Abbott is barely over 5'5", weighs less than 150 pounds, and is 73 years old. But despite his age and diminutive appearance, the polite, well-spoken, and neatly dressed retiree is a dangerous man in the eyes of Fort Lauderdale city officials and business leaders. Last week, that's actually 2 months ago now, after he once again refused to listen to reason, they threatened to put an end to his lawlessness. Do it again, they warned, and we'll arrest you. His offense? Feeding the homeless. And not just feeding them any old place, but inviting them to gather in the shadows of beachfront hotels, condominiums, restaurants, and trendy tourist hangouts, property that constitutes some of the priciest real estate in the city. But more important than the price of the real estate are the wads of bills stuffed in the pockets of out-of-towners who might inadvertently stumble upon the unwashed masses gathered for Abbott's once-a-week spreads at South Beach Park across from Bahia Mar. We have people spending $200 to $300 a day to be here, says Jack Moss, president of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Lodging and Hospitality Association. They shouldn't have to be exposed to people panhandling. They shouldn't have to be exposed to people looking for handouts. They shouldn't have to be exposed to people urinating in the bushes. They shouldn't have to be exposed to those types of activities when they're here to have a good time. Luckily for Moss and members of his association who are fed up with Abbott's feedings, the city has laws against such things. We just asked the city to enforce its own laws, he said. And city officials say they are more than willing to do so. Although they called off the cops last week and let Abbott serve his Wednesday meal as planned, again that's in late January, they say his days of feeding the homeless at the beach are numbered. The city has park rules that say there can be no delivery of social services without a permit, explains Assistant City Manager Bud Bentley. While Bentley says he's willing to work with Abbott to help him find some other place to set up his traveling soup kitchen, Abbott is equally adamant that no compromise will be reached. Call me a stiff-necked Jew, but it's tyranny, and I'm not going to give in to tyranny, he says. If the city wants a fight, he says, he'll give it to them. In fact, he says, he relishes the opportunity. I hope they arrest me, he says. I'd love to test that law in court. It's blatantly unconstitutional. He may not be big, powerful, or well-connected, but he has one attribute that city officials may have overlooked. I'm a scrappy old geezer, he says. When police handed him a slip of paper alerting him of the nearly two-year-old law that prohibits people from providing services for the homeless in city parks, Abbott looked at it and shrugged. After all, it's not the first time he's had run-ins with people in power who thought they could push him around. I'm not intimidated, he said. I'm not intimidated in the least. I've been confronted by the KKK when I was registering blacks to vote in Jackson, Mississippi. They tried to intimidate me. I wasn't intimidated by them either. In fact, shaking up the power brokers has been his life's work. He fought for fair housing in the 1950s in suburban Philadelphia, exposing white landlords who refused to rent homes to blacks. As the civil rights movement grew, he traveled throughout the South campaigning for racial equality. A delegate to the Democratic National Convention in 1964, he launched a protest against segregation by sitting with a group of black delegates from Mississippi who were denied seats on the convention floor. When Chicago Mayor Richard Daley ordered cops to attack Vietnam War protesters at the 1968 Democratic National Convention, Abbott was in the thick of it, registering his protest against the tyrannical use of power. I'm a born liberal, says the former jewelry sales representative who lives in Pompano Beach. I'm an eclectic iconoclast. Long ago, he says, he came up with the perfect solution to silence the unending debate over school prayer. He proposed requiring teachers to read from different religious texts each day. One day it would be the Bible, the next day the Torah, the next day the Quran, and so on, he explains. It would become a lesson in comparative religion, he says. It would teach children about different religions. His proposal went all the way to the Pennsylvania legislature, where it was defeated. When he moved to South Florida in 1970, his political activism became more personal. He and his wife Maureen began a campaign to help the homeless. She could spot a homeless person a mile away, he says. She'd say, there's one, turn the car around. Then she'd ask me, what's the biggest bill you have in your wallet? A 10 or a 20? I'd give her whatever I had, and she would drop it on the ground and then tap the person on the shoulder and say, I think you dropped this. That's what I call the Maureen method, he says. When she died unexpectedly 6 years ago, he decided to continue her legacy. He founded Love Thy Neighbor and began gathering food and donations and serving up meals to the homeless.